Welcome to Inflection Point, interviews with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. Why are we still challenging traditional assumptions?
When you see a man in a uniform, as a soldier, as a policeman, your brain just accepts it. He doesn't have to work hard. When you see a woman in uniform, your brain actually has to work a little bit harder to process the image.
Challenging Assumptions with Sarah Silverman and Catherine Hardwick. That's our inflection point. Working female directors are a rare breed in Hollywood. And it's even more rare to find one who's been in the business for over 30 years and still working. After establishing herself as a production designer, Catherine Hardwick made her directorial debut in 2003 with the movie 13 and attained blockbuster status directing Twilight. She has six more film credits to her name, including her latest film, Miss You Already, with Toni Collette and Drew Barrymore. And this wasn't even her first career. And a little apology ahead of time, we were having a bad phone day. Catherine Hardwick, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Looking at your career as a director, including your most recent film, Miss You Already, two themes seem to run through your work, female friendship and coming of age. Why have you gravitated toward those areas?
Well, I think, we all gravitate toward stories that we can relate to, that resonate with us. So certainly the coming of age stories, that was, you know, starting with 13, that was a family friend, somebody that I really love, Nikki Reed, that was going through, very creative kid, but went through this very troubled time. And I wanted to see if I had any chance of helping her connect that to her creative side instead of her destructive side. So I was just kind of plunged into that world. And then, of course, we know that the teenage years are our most volatile years. It's the first time you could, you know, kiss a boy or drink a beer or drive a car or, you know, get into trouble or all those things. And our bodies are changing, our brains are changing, our hearts are changing. So it's just kind of like a very high level of drama in people's lives. So friendship, you know, that was so much about 13 was about the need to connect with this other girl, the cool girl, the popular girl, to develop this strong bond with somebody kind of like the wild girl, which also Miss You Already kind of has the wild girl, which is played by Toni Collette, Millie. And those kind of wild, dangerous girls, they bring, you know, fun and craziness and unpredictability to our lives. So we kind of are drawn to those people like magnets and then sometimes scared by them. Sometimes they turn toxic, but it's a dramatic kind of exciting ride. Friendship is any kind of friendship, really.
Well, I saw your directorial debut. I saw 13 when I had a 9-month-old little girl at the time, and I have to tell you, it really stuck with me. And I've spent the last 13 years wondering what was going to happen when she turned 13. So, well done, and also, geez.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch at times, but completely compelling. So congratulations on that, being the first one out of the gate. What would you say was your greatest influence growing up?
Well, you know, my parents, they were pretty cool. They encouraged us to be creative, and we lived in a remote, like a rural town in South Texas. My dad was a farmer, my mom a school teacher. We didn't have much money. Farming doesn't exactly make money, or school teaching, so... You know, we got to be creative. Like, you know, Dad would literally come home for a gift to us. Like, Christmas present would be just a big mountain of, like, carrot dirt, like the dirt that clings to the carrots from the farm. And then you had to, you're like, gee, Dad, thanks a lot. You know, and then you had to, like, make something out of it, like dig tunnels and build houses and weird things. And I think it really inspired me to, you know, just be creative and just make up stuff, make up stories and strange things and whole worlds, you know. So I'd say my dad was like a really great influence on me.
Did he? Yeah. I wonder if he knew that it would lead you to this career.
Well, he was excited when I, you know, went to architecture school. And I think he loved that because it was almost a direct inspiration from, you know, building little towns in carrot dirt to building a whole little, actually he and I together built a whole subdivision. We got to put in the lake, the pool, the tennis courts, made all the houses solar energy oriented and everything. That was pretty neat, and they're still standing, 120 houses, townhouses in South Texas.
Oh, in
but
real
that.
Human yeah. size. Actual people are living
oh,
in
yeah.
them.
Oh, yeah. No, I was a full-on architect, full-fledged architect, and then I switched and came out to film school, which, of course, when I said that, I want to switch careers. I mean, my parents also encouraged me, great, it sounds fun, you know. So they were always very positive like that, like follow your dream, you know.
Well, what your first 14 or 15 years in film was as a production designer. What does that entail?
Yes, the production designer, well, that was like directly people saw, oh, they said, you're an architect. Well, you should production design this movie. And it was a perfect, you know, great idea. Whoever, I can't remember who told me that, but it was a perfect idea because, of course, I already had to do all kinds of drawings and sketches and pre-visualization and, you know, all that stuff as an architect. So it was a fun translation, except as an architect, you're creating like new buildings that, you know, are sleek and fabulous. And then as a production designer, you're actually help building characters. So, you know, some of these, you know, fancy houses I would think I would be designing, you're actually adding grunge and layers and junk and still, you know, newspaper stacked up in the corners and that kind of thing. So you had to kind of like rethink design, but I loved it, just getting into characters and how can the buildings tell a story. So it was a great transition. And then I was lucky enough to work for all these wonderful directors like David O. Russell and Richard Linklater and Cameron Crowe and Lisa Toledinka. So I just had like a front row seat. I was, you know, one of their key department heads working with them on these very cool movies. So that helped me a lot when I decided to become a director.
Well, I was going to mention Lisa Toledinka because she is one of the few women directors that you worked with at that
yeah.
time on Laurel Canyon. Did working with her have any impact on your intent to become a director or how you wanted to be as a director?
Well, you know, I had actually right after architecture school, and then I built that subdivision in South Texas that I was kind of referring to, I came out to UCLA grad school, and then at UCLA, you're basically, everybody's a director. You finance your own film, you direct it, you make the sandwiches, you do the costumes, you do everything. It's not like the studio system, like some film schools. And so I already had it planned into my head, okay, I'm a director. I got in film school, so I made my own little short films and everything. But I needed to make money. And then people said, well, you could make money as a production designer. So that led me, you know, kind of on a sidetrack. So I already knew, and between every job, long before I met Lisa, between every job I would be writing my own screenplays and making short films, taking acting classes, directing classes, you know, budgeting films, you know, I was doing everything I could to get a movie made. And so literally right after working with Lisa, of course that was great and inspiring to see her, you know, directing, I think it was her second film, so that was very cool. And then her producer, who was very supportive of her, became one of my two producers on 13. So right away, I did the movie 13, and then we were both at Sundance together that year with Laurel Canyon and 13.
Oh, how?
That was quite fun, yeah.
Fabulous. Well, did she have any advice for you as you set out to do your own film?
You know, it was interesting because Lisa is kind of say a reserved, or at least at that time she was a pretty reserved person, and so I really learned more from her from just kind of observing. And she has a very, you know, quiet, nice, introspective manner on the set, and she kept everything calm and just very thoughtful. So that's kind of one thing I saw from her. And then I had the, you know, contrast that, actually that's the same way Richard Linklater is. He's very quiet and thoughtful. And then David O. Russell is very high energy and spontaneous and completely different. So, you know, it was quite interesting to see all these different directors that I worked with, see everybody's different style. And then, of course, you as a director have to kind of find your own style. You have to be a leader, too. And, you know, it's very tricky. It's like a huge, crazy skill set to pull off being a director.
Right. You've got hundreds of employees working for you, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, but what happens on a film, as a director, you have that same level of management skills needed, but you also have a time pressure that's, you know, pretty overwhelming that, you know, if depending on what movie it is, your shoot day could be $80,000 a day, it could be, you know, $150,000 a day. So you're kind of like, okay, am I spending $15,000 a minute? If I don't have a good plan, I'm not focused, I literally just wasted $15,000. So you have to really stay focused and stay somehow centered and not panic when everything's going wrong, which is very difficult, you know, when it's raining and it's not supposed to be, or an actor is having a meltdown, or it's just like all odds are kind of against you. So how do you stay calm and focused? That's the big challenge.
So how do you stay calm and focused?
Well, you know, sometimes you don't. I mean, I've been on sets that are famously described where the director lost his temper and got in a fight with, you know, the main actor. Or I've been on a movie, Tombstone, where the director fired 92 people. And been on movies where we've gone way over budget, over schedule, we've shut down films. So, you know, there's a thousand things that can happen. But for me, you know, of course I try, as I do in, you know, more movies, I feel like, okay, somehow I can survive this, try to stay calm, breathe through it. I made a new mantra on my last film, which is dolphins, dolphins, dolphins. Whenever something went wrong, I would just try to say that to myself.
I love it.
Oh, my God. Whatever trick you can think of, just stay calm.
Catherine, there's a video going around from the website Funny or Die that you make a cameo in, and it's called The Real Reason Women Don't Direct More Action Movies, which features three young businessmen asking ridiculous questions of talented directors, female directors, including you. Let's just hear that.
We're really excited to have you here. You know, we want to hear all your thoughts and your take on Space Cops 4. Back into space. We're back this time.
It is super cool. I love it. Yeah.
We really think that this could be a summer blockbuster for us.
Yeah, definitely.
We have one question, though, about the needs of this film.
Awesome.
What we're really looking for is for the film to go...
Like that, specifically?
Can you make it go boom?
I'm sorry, what?
Okay, for instance, during the chase sequence.
I love the chase sequence.
We all love the chase sequence. And during the chase sequence, you got one car chasing the other car, the car's going vroom, the other car's going vroom, and then we need the movie to go boom.
You think you can handle that?
I've directed an action-adventure movie before, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Twilight made $400 million. I think what I did worked.
Hey, I'm Team Edward, okay? Is that all right to say that?
That's right.
Okay. Let me throw this at you. We were curious as to what your approach would be to scenes that need a little.
Rico! Hey, is that Rico over there? Rico, are you over there?
Never catch me! Never catch me! You'll never catch me!
Have you been in meetings that were actually like this?
Well, usually the executives aren't quite that entertaining as those guys are, since they're pretty talented comedians. But I am usually laughing to myself on the inside in some of these meetings with some of the questions that I get asked, or just some of the like little insidious built-in prejudice or little side comments like that. And that is even if I can even get into the meetings, because a lot of times the truth is we don't even get called.
Why do you think that there is so much bias toward male directors?
Well, there is a very extensive study that's just been done by the Sundance Institute in cooperation with Women in Film, and they hired a USC professor to try to answer this exact question, and there's like a 20-page report published on it, because they did all these interviews with studio executives and, you know, agents and heads of studios and things, trying to get at this exact question, why don't you hire more women? And also there have been, you know, just so many studies on this that I think one of them that people give all kinds of excuses. Oh, they're not very qualified, which of course is the chicken and the egg, because if you don't hire them, then they don't have the credits, and of course the men are going to be more qualified. And then there's, of course, the hidden agenda, you know, just a good old boys club, you know. And of course, I love everything that Sheryl Sandberg documented in great detail, which is prejudice against women in general, bias against women in general in the book Lean In. Fascinating studies there. But another study that I read said that when you see a man in a uniform, as a soldier, as a policeman, as a doctor, any kind of traditional male role, your brain just accepts it. It doesn't have to work hard. When you see a woman in uniform, as a pilot's uniform or whatever, your brain actually has to work a little bit harder to process the image. You actually have to think, now, wait a minute, is that woman really a pilot? Or, let's translate it, is she really the director, the boss, going to be the director, the boss of, you know, 150 guys on set? That kind of thing. So it's just everybody has to work a little harder because we're wired a different way. So we have to work harder, I think, to overcome that and change that kind of thinking, which is a good challenge, you know.
Well, would you say that things have picked up for you in the last few years?
I would say that I am just trying as hard as I can, working as hard as I can every single day to get projects done, as many directors, male and female, are. We're writing our own scripts. We are meeting on 10 different projects, meeting with financiers, doing everything you can every day to try to get something to happen because, you know, so many movies, you know, almost happen but don't happen. There are so many prejudices against female directors and so many challenges that, you know, I've been, like, diversifying, and I've done two TV episodes, two TV pilots that both went to series. I've written my own treatment, a TV series that is right now the script. They're reading the script at USA right now. Very exciting, about architects. It's set in the world of architecture, circling back. And then, you know, I've written a screenplay literally in the last month and a half. I've done this movie. I mean, we're just, I think myself and every other, you know, female director, we just have to keep trying to do 50 things. I've directed 2 music videos. I mean, you just have to keep going. Nobody's going to give it to you. No one's going to hand you anything easy. In fact, when it seems too good to be true, it's probably not true.
This is such a tough business. What keeps you going?
Well, you know, I've grown up as a creative person. Like, I like to be making things all the time. Like, I like to be making my little tiny towns in the dirt piles, mm-hmm. or doing drawings, or, you know, writing a screenplay or painting something. So I don't like to sit still. I mean, I'm not like a leisure oriented person. I like to create.
Well, Catherine Hardwick, thank you so much for talking with me today, and thank you so much for everything that you're creating.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And let's get more female directors out there making interesting movies. They don't all have to be about killing and revenge.
Excellent.
And, oh, yeah, we should talk about Nisha already because we want everybody to see it. And it's so fun and written by a woman and 3 female stars, Toni Collette, Drew Barrymore, and Jacqueline Bisset. So it's a really powerful, fun movie and beautiful songs written by women in the movie. Joan Jett wrote a song. Diane Warren wrote 2 songs. There's some super cool stuff that I think people will love. And there's sexy guys in it, too.
Okay.
And I should say this. I want to say one other thing, that the men are actually really important in the movie, too. It's about female friendship, but it's also about the impact of all the issues they're going through on their family, on their husbands, you know, on their kids, on their boyfriends. So, you know, it's really about life, you know.
And are they good role models, these men?
You know what? I've got to tell you, I'm so happy about this. All 3 of the main guys in the movie are actually really cool guys that you do not see in films. They're not juvenile. They're not childish. They're not, you know, like out there killing people or hitmen. They're badass, beautiful, but dimensional men with a heart and soul. So they're actually the coolest guys I've seen in movies in a long time.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Catherine Hardwick.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Twilight director Catherine Hardwick. Her new movie is Miss You Already, starring Drew Barrymore and Toni Collette, in theaters this fall. as part of our inflection point, Challenging Assumptions, be sure to check out my interview with Sarah Silverman.
I spent the whole day with them and we had lunch and then they said, so are you a typist or an assistant? I go, no, I'm a writer like you, asshole.
That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. While you're there, listen to previous shows and sign up for our email updates. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/inflectionpointradio. Follow us and follow me on Twitter at L.A. Schiller. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.